This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
The first thing we're going to do is have them introduce themselves. So start by just telling about yourself and describe what you're doing with social media. We'll go ahead and start on this side with you, Matt.
Okay, so I don't want to misrepresent myself. I'm not a ministry. I'm a what I am involved in day to day is a business, but I guess we heard that is a ministry, so in that way. I'm Matt Landis. I own Landis Computer, and I use social media. Where I've gotten involved in social media is through business. And how that started is I started blogging so that I would remember stuff. I would find something out, and then I would blog it so that I didn't forget it myself. And I started realized other people wanted to see this too. And it has come to the point in the last probably 3 or 4 years, I've had 3 million views on my blog, which started as my little scribbles to make sure I don't forget things. And because of that, I also kind of got into Twitter. Now, I know Terry does, he doesn't get in that side of things. I don't claim to be a real Facebook fan. I'll let the rest do that. So blogging, I do Twitter pretty much. There's about several thousand people that follow the things I say, whatever the reason that is. It's not because I say got up and brushed my teeth. I know that. And then a last one, I also do videos, and I just hope Hans never looks at them, because I don't do videos because I'm an expert video person. I do it because I want to show people things, and I never actually show up in my own videos. It's always pointing at some technical gadget that I'm explaining to people, and it's very focused on a very technical subject, and that has gotten. I never expected it. Once again, it was just a little thing. I think about 500,000 views. And this is really technical stuff that none of you care about whatsoever. But that is how I've gotten involved in social media. So.
Well, I'm Hans Mast, and I don't know. I've been involved in social media from fairly early on when it was a thing. And I do a diversity of things. But yeah, very involved. Facebook is probably the primary social media platform that I use. And then I also very much enjoy thinking about social media from the perspective of marketing, because there's a lot with search engine optimization and with marketing, with getting buzz, having stuff go viral. It's a very powerful communications platform, and that intrigues me because I enjoy communicating. I enjoy sharing ideas and that sort of thing. I also very much, I'm a photographer, and I enjoy video as well. And so that part, it's a way to share some of that. And so I enjoy those aspects of it. I've helped several ministries with different photography and videography projects and so forth.
My name is Terry Bauman. For a business, I have Progressive Data Solutions. We do software development for businesses. Not really too much into, we do some web design and more data connected stuff that wouldn't interest most of you, almost like Matt said. We also have a family archery shop, and we do use Facebook for advertising on that. Got into Facebook, I don't know, several years ago. I signed up for it, and then I thought, is this really the right thing to do? Should I? Shouldn't I? Is this really what our church would like? I don't know. Then I started getting some emails from Facebook saying, so-and-so wants to be your friend in Guatemala. So-and-so wants to be your friend in Canada. And I'm like, well, we used to serve on the mission field with those people. I really feel not obligated, but I'm a social guy. I'm an extroverted computer programmer, if there is such a thing, so instead of introverted. And the personality really tests show that. And so I want to be friends with him, so I finally said, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get into it, and it's something that has to be managed. I appreciate what a fellow by the name of Matt Musser, I think, I don't know if he's in the room, but he said at lunchtime, he said, you have to be intentional about it, so we'll probably talk about that more later. Almost like a Facebook addict, I'll admit that, and think that's all about me.
Could I ask, maybe just ask so we know you a little better. How many of you, let's say, use Twitter? Oh, okay. So okay, so we have a lot of those. So I'm not the only. I'm not a freak, I guess.
No, we're all freaks.
Okay. And maybe YouTube. In the back. Okay. Okay. Yeah, my hand's up too. I had said that earlier. And what else do we have on here? Facebook, not so much merely just to talk to people, but maybe as a kind of ministry related. Okay, okay. Well, that gives us a little feedback, a little. Is there anything else that you would have wanted to know about?
Any bloggers?
Yeah. That's
oh, I didn't ask that.
Okay. A few.
Our ministry blogs.
A ministry blog, okay. Mm-hmm. Personal blogs, ministry blogs? Both, okay. All right. It's hard to know. Maybe a little sometimes. Yeah. Okay.
Do you or your organization use social media for as mass media or for conversation?
Yeah. So there's kind of two ways you can use.
Could you speak up?
Yes. The question is, do you or your organization use social media as mass media or for conversation?
So the question is, are we using it to just do like all the big organization, that is, blast information in one direction, or is it something that's interactive? And I would say like for my blog, it is kind of one direction largely, although you wouldn't I have some blog articles that have hundreds of comments on. So, but I don't usually answer them all. I just can't, you get kind of overwhelmed after a while. So a blog is kind of by nature a little bit one direction. Twitter for me is, it's pretty interactive. When I post something, if someone replies to it, I talk to them. I do talk to them. So that poses the challenge of, how do you divvy up your time? Do you watch that pretty close? While we were at lunch here, Microsoft connected with me through Twitter private message. So it can almost be like an informal email, kind of. It's a little more public. I mean, it's quite public. I mean, people can see you're going back and forth with them. I sometimes liken, Twitter, I know for some groups this has a little negative connotation, a little bit like a CB radio that reaches around the world, and you can turn the channel on you want by using hashtags. That's, if you've heard of the hashtag thing, I follow a very narrow band of that. There's some technical things. I follow that. I reply to people. I give feedback to people. So Twitter, more interactive. Blog, maybe one direction. And YouTube very much is kind of one direction. So.
Yeah, I've done some of both. I think my primary passion, I think, probably is, at least for ministries, is a bit more of a one-direction thing. The cool thing, though, about social media is people do have the opportunity to talk back. And so if you post something on Facebook, often it has a bit more of an aura of truthfulness than, like, more traditional media channels, because it's an open platform where anyone can pop in and say anything. So if you're saying things that are not true, people will pop along and say that often. Like, you see that happen a lot. You have people coming in and say, this company had really bad customer service or whatever. You see that on big companies' websites all the time. Golden Rule Travel, we posted a story to our Facebook page the other day, and we got like 20 comments all saying, it was a story about customer service, and we got like 20 comments saying, yes, Golden Rule Travel has wonderful customer service. And so the impact of that with other people, with just lots of random people chiming in saying, yes, this is true, really has some power to it. And even the possibility of that,
and sometimes
can legitimize. And the inverse, and that's what
just
you have to be
yesterday,
careful
of. Microsoft did an announcement of a new product. And in that announcement, they took a little pot shot at Cisco. Cisco and Microsoft go back and forth. And what they said is they could find the Cisco CEO on one of Microsoft's technologies, and they showed it. Well, very shortly, there was a reply on there that said that is not a real account, and they were held to the truth. So they, you know, it just naturally showed them up. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so even when that doesn't happen, it can add legitimacy. The thing that, that I'm kind of passionate about in social media is when you can take when you can tell a story. I think that's one of the best ways to communicate through social media, and whether it's through an evocative image, whether it's a little story that came out of your ministry, some little anecdote. If you can share a story, whether it's a video, lots of different mediums, but people connect with stories, and people these days, that you can do a newsletter, and a rich newsletter is good. But if you can do these little bite-sized chunks into people's lives, these little stories, these little compelling things about what's going on in your ministry, you constantly kind of have that access into people's lives if they're using social media on a regular basis, and it can be a really powerful tool to you know, for people to pray for your ministry, for people to become involved, to know how they can, you know, include a call to action of some kind. That's a really important idea in marketing, and marketing and ministry, you know, they're very closely related, because there's a lot of you're trying to in ministry, you're trying to get people to do something, whether it's pray, whether it's become involved, volunteer, whatever. And so getting something that grabs people, it's harder to do shorter chunks. It really is. It's much easier to do a long newsletter, but often it's easy to do that and not do so in a compelling way. And being forced to do little chunks that really grab people, and you get instant feedback. That's really helpful. You get instant feedback because you see whether people are retweeting this or liking it or sharing it, that sort of thing. And so it can be a powerful tool to train you as well.
Okay, another ministry that I'd be involved in is this one, Anabaptist Resources, which is a website to put materials on for small ministries or ministries that don't have their own website that want to see their materials or others posted on a place where they can send people to. So think of it as an Amazon for Mennonites or Anabaptists, right? I should have said Anabaptists. But the discussion came up, and I think Matt even asked me today, are you going to have, what did you say, social media or like a forum on this? And I said, well, the question already came up on our committee. I think somebody issued a concern to the committee. Are you going to allow people to post comments about the content that's on that website? And we decided no, because we don't want this to be a place of arguments. Because if I'm out in the street in Pittsburgh, New York, Chicago, wherever, at a For Jesus thing, and I hand out one of our Access the Heart of God cards with a QR code in the middle, I don't want them to go there, and the first taste they get is these guys can't decide where they're at. But in saying all that, I'm not saying there's not a place for what Hans was talking about. So I think, maybe it has to be managed and flavored, geared, or designed, or how should I say, for the right...
You have to be intentional.
Like we talked about at lunch. I think, let me just read you an email I got from somebody in Western Canada. I'm from Canada, maybe it'll show in some of the way I pronounce some of my words, but I think I don't fit in anywhere. When I go up there, they say I'm a U.S. now, by the way I talk. When I'm down here, people still think I'm from up there. So, but anyway, this came from a former school teacher who lives in Alberta. He's talking about a fellow here in the States, and he didn't have his name quite right, but he said, do you know a so-and-so? And I thought for a while, I finally said, yeah, I think I do. And it might be so-and-so. And he said, well, this name sounds right. He said, I think I saw his name once. He's on a discussion forum that I frequent on occasion. He seems very cynical and is always trying to put people on the spot, and is really against American authority, the government, and the police. Talks a lot about police shootings. I was just curious what makes him tick, as it were. Seems something is eating at him, and he seems to have taken a disliking to me for some reason. So I'm just saying that let's keep social media above this, maybe.
One of the later questions is, what is social media really bad at, or what? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing to be really cautious in social media. It's very much, social media is a reflection of people, but you don't have some of that personal connection sometimes, and it becomes very easy for people to be harsh and to be uncompromising. And it's something I struggle with a lot because I have a lot of strong opinions, and I love the truth, and I like telling, you know, and communicate. And so it's just easy. It's very easy to not have that human connection and then say things that you wouldn't say face to face.
But there's also positive. I've gotten to know Hans through disagreeing with him, so it can be done agreeably as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And Matt just accused me at lunch of never responding to his posts on Facebook if I don't feel like starting an argument, which might be true. I can't remember if I've ever. I posted something about Netanyahu recently, and you made a comment, and I decided not to even fire it up on Facebook.
Okay. Does the audience have any questions, any input on the question we just discussed? Anything you'd like to add? Okay. The next couple questions deal with YouTube. How many of you are using YouTube? Okay, so we have, so you all do use YouTube, and YouTube is something that sometimes can be controversial. What are your frank thoughts on the YouTube environment? How do you use it, I guess, would be a good way to approach it as well.
Yeah, I started using YouTube a while ago, and it was more primitive then. It was kind of a place where you went and you could upload videos. It was pretty primitive. I mean, you upload a video, someone else could watch it. Since then, my feeling it has changed dramatically, and of course I might get disagree. I did not ask them at all this, but. What I have noticed recently, they're trying to monetize it. They want to make it so that it pays for them. So they're putting on ads, and they're suggesting other videos. Sometimes they are very objectionable, extremely so. You know, to the point I question, you know, to be very frank, question using it. I know ministries like Oasis Corral use it very, very good ways. You know, I look at it and I. There are days I wonder, and I'm not like Hans. I'm not an artistic person, so that would be one easy one for me to just say let's forget that one. But I would have some questions. I know the other evening somebody wanted to see a YouTube video, and I showed it, and immediately there were some suggestions on the side that were terribly objectionable. I just I cringe. I have a lot of questions. I'll just say it that way.
One thing that I like to encourage people to do is install ad blocker wherever, no matter what. Just that's if I happen to be using your computer and I see you don't have AdBlock Plus installed, I might just install it for you without telling you. It blocks YouTube ads. So that really makes a big difference. You still have the suggested videos, which you can't much get around that. That combines two different things. It combines the keywords and so forth in the video, and it combines what other people have been watching who also watch that, and then also combines your own search history, your own videos that you've watched into which videos it suggests. And I think a fourth thing is what they can make the most money on as well. I think that's we don't know what their algorithm is totally, but we can guess. I just like to share a little story about YouTube, very personal story, but I think we can draw some important lessons from it. When I went to SMBI for 2 years and shared a lot of videos from SMBI, a lot of them were there were a lot of choir videos, and I still get a lot of positive feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, thousands and thousands of views. I was in Australia once, and someone's like, "Oh, I love those videos. Like, we don't have access to that kind of music here. We don't have choirs like that here. Just love it." You know, and so a lot of positive stuff that came out of those videos, for instance. Then I also posted some videos of just some sort of fun stuff, blowing off steam, and people enjoyed those. The problem was, it was not at all representative of SMBI. It was a very fractional, is a very small part of the SMBI experience. And this might have been one of the first things that came up when people searched for SMBI. And so there were people at SMBI that were understandably unhappy about that, and because that isn't what SMBI represents. And so they very... Cliff was very nice about it, came alongside and said, "Hey, can you help us with this?" We explained his concerns and I agreed and I took some of them down. And so I just, as an organization, you do need to be aware of how others that are not directly under your authority necessarily are portraying your organization on social media. So keep an ear open for that. Don't take a censorship attitude. I mean, do like Cliff did, come alongside and partner with the person. But do keep your eye out. And here's my bias towards media production coming in. I think the best way to sort of prevent that kind of thing, where a very fringe sort of thing happens, to be the social media thing, is to produce your own compelling content that is the first result, you know, and that does and that way you can show what your organization is passionate about and what really does represent your organization. And if you be proactive there. The other thing that I've often run into creating content for ministries, the exciting stuff, a lot of ministry involves a lot of work and a lot of like hard, like long, unglamorous work, and it's really hard to create compelling content that represents that and represents what a ministry actually is, and it's the stuff that it's just the opposite. There with SMBI, you saw like the fun blowing off steam stuff that's not all the time is people like that, you know. And so that's just something that I haven't found an easy answer to, but it's something to be aware of. And it takes work to make the heart of it, you know, compelling.
I do use YouTube some. And I do have a YouTube channel. I mean, upload some stuff, but it, probably not everybody here would care for it. It's just gospel, bluegrass music tend to be what I am. Probably not everybody likes that, or my own family playing or relatives. It's not really a ministry, so I use YouTube to watch it, and I do upload a few things. But other than that, I think, too, I'm not sure where we are in our list of, in our agenda here, but yeah, there's stuff to be cautious of. Like Matt said, I think when Google bottom out, I think the monetizing started a whole lot more with ads and stuff. And I like what Hans was saying. I've used that ad blocker.
And the ad blocker does take it out of the stream.
Okay, that's really good.
I wouldn't have known that for sure, but all I know is ad blocker works well. It's easy to install, and it doesn't. I've never seen it where it screwed up a computer. Do you know any Hans? So install ad blocker and
So the two kind of negative, I mean maybe three. You know, one is the ads put in the videos that you can't kind of get around. You used to be able to pretty much get rid of them right away. Anymore, that kind of goes longer. The second one is the suggested videos, which, what is their formula? I have no idea. I don't think it always relates to the person searching.
Well, they can even look at what you Google search, because it's owned by the same empire.
Okay. Yeah. And then the third would be comments. Yeah. The comments can be, so if the ad blocker works, that's a good tip to know.
Very good.
I have a question over here.
Is there an alternative platform to YouTube that might be less of a problem?
Vimeo. It has its own issues. It actually has a lower standard overall as far as some objectionable content, but it is far less aggressive with suggested videos and ads. So unless you go looking for the stuff that they have a lower bar on, it's not going to be an issue. So for a ministry, just using a video hosting service, Vimeo is a good option, I think.
The negative thing to that is if you really want people to find it, people, number one, they go to YouTube and say, SMBI or ministry or Oasis Corral. I'm just off the top of my head.
And YouTube results are likely to be higher on Google for some strange reason.
Yeah.
You mentioned What about Godvine? Are you familiar with
Godvine? I'm not. I don't either. Sorry.
Now, Godvine's out there. I don't know how many are familiar with God. Is that Godvine? Is it pretty good? I mean, with its content.
Do they have their own hosting, or are they just syndicating YouTube and other hosting services? Do you know?
Well, I think they manage. I don't know that question, but I don't know that even the public can upload it to Godvine. I think they manage all the content.
Okay.
Because I wanted to upload something one time and I couldn't figure out how to do it. Does anybody know? Okay.
Okay. We have a question over here.
Just another issue about plugins. There is a plugin that works really well to strip out the sidebar and such of YouTube page. It's called CleanerTube.
Okay.
CleanerTube. Okay. It's a wonderful thing. It makes your YouTube experience completely white, and all you see is the video itself.
Okay, that's a very good tip.
Spell out again.
CleanerTube.
CleanR. Cleaner.
And then tube at the end.
Yeah.
Just the same.
CleanR. At least it works on the Mac platform very well.
Thank you.
I'm not sure about Godvine. I always felt like they just didn't have a good focus.
Okay.
I'm totally not familiar with them.
In their curation.
And I'm not promoting them at all. I'm just not sure where they're at either.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, the next question deals with this specifically the Anabaptist mindset. How does the social media, the ideological bias of social media, how could it work against the Anabaptist mindset? And so how could it fight against the Anabaptist mindset? Also, how could it work for the Anabaptist mindset?
I thought I gave all these a lot of thought, but I realized that one I didn't. One of the things with any mass media, there is a tendency to make a personality. You know, whether it's a Twitter personality or there is very much a bias towards not ideas, not in-depth ideas, but the personality. And I think that, you know, I kind of hold the idea not that technology is neither right, that it's amoral, but that it has ideology. And I would say that, you know, mass media and Twitter that is used as mass media has the bias of making personalities. And Anabaptists are all about not making personalities. So if you look at a very nice Anabaptist website like Oasis Corral, there's no person that is a personality. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of, and I just use that as an example because it seems like a very nice one. You know, even my own, you know, it's Matt Landis doing this review. And I'm a little, you know, you not a personality, but you know, you're kind of it's you doing it. There's a little, I think there is a little bit of a bias. You know, on Twitter you can be kind of your avatar. They kind of get to know you as that person. Whereas you know, whether it's Allegheny Boys Camp, it's the group effort. Whether it's any of the many good courses that have YouTube channels, it's a group effort. So I really do think mass media of any kind, and Twitter or or social media used as mass media, has exactly the same personality promoting ideology, I would say.
The flip side of that is that we as an Anabaptist community are very community oriented, and social media is all about connection and about connecting people, and that's why we've heard Facebook probably referred to as the modern version of the budget, and there's people who enjoy reading the budget that also very much enjoy Facebook because of the connecting aspect, and it's knowing what's happening in people's lives and doing so on a broader scale. So in that case, I think it's very compatible with the Anabaptist idea of community. I very much agree, though, it can very much amplify certain personalities, amplify certain voices in a way that can be dangerous and unhealthy.
And to add some color to the Facebook budget, that is an extremely perfect analogy. I mean, both the budget and Facebook have ideology, and that is disclosure. It's disclosing things about yourself. So they both have ideology. My thought is when you get a new piece of technology, look at it, and the first thing you say is, what ideology does this have? What's this tend towards? The interesting thing is the budget and Facebook have other ideologies as well. So Facebook has a very immediate, informal, it can happen right away, whereas the budget has a little more of a formal, it has to go through a process. So there's combined ideologies that make it what it is. So budget and Facebook isn't exactly the same, although extremely the same. I mean, they both say, you know, I woke up this morning and it was raining. You know, both. I mean, sometimes you can take word for word what one or the other says, and they say exactly the same thing. But they have some other ideologies that make it different. So,
I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. I didn't know this morning when I came here that I was going to be sitting here, but I'm going back on some old emails that I. A couple years ago, I wrote an article called "The God of Information," and I'm trying to pull together some of the thoughts I had from there. One of the things Matt and I were discussing over lunch was, is technology moral or amoral? Amoral meaning it has no morality. And are we agreeing or aren't we? I'm not sure. But anyway, he thought maybe we agreed, then we weren't sure. But anyway, I'm going to say that the way I'm feeling right now, and I read the article and I see what I did as I said back then that technology in itself is amoral. So this phone right here is amoral. It's going to be like a machine. I put your phone number and I hit send. It's going to call you every time. And it's not going to do something different the next time based on who I talk to in its simple state. However, if I fire Facebook up on here and I talk to Hans about something, Facebook is probably going to give me feedback from some Ed. If we're talking about what kind of a laptop you have there, Lenovo or whatever it is.
Samsung.
Okay, Samsung. I'm probably going to get ads from Samsung. So now, is that amoral or moral? Once it's getting that smart. I see in my article that I stopped there and I said, I'm not going to talk about texts, this is what I said. I'm not going to talk about those things right now because I was just trying to talk about technology as a whole. Is that I'm going to just leave that as, well, what I basically said is that you can go from moral to amoral to immoral all in one conversation. So it switches so fast that to try and identify a certain thing as texting is amoral, immoral, amoral is impossible. It's all, and then I quoted the verse, evil communication corrupt good manners. So that's a little bit.
Just to bridge kind of these two perspectives, I think I would agree, you know, tools are amoral in and of themselves, and it is the people that drive the morality of them, how they're used. But there are certain tools that are predisposed to certain uses. Mm-hmm. Guns have, you know, hunting and murder, you know, are kind of the two
the
main...
Guns kill things.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of what
well,
they do.
Well, people kill things, actually. But but the thing is, the guns have very limited uses because of the way the tool is formed. And they have certain predispositions. Yeah. It is still the person that is making the moral choice. Mm-hmm. And social media amplifies mm-hmm. what a person is saying and amplifies what is in people's hearts. And but there's predispositions based on the tool.
I'm 66 years old. I predated the Apple II. I owned about every version of Mac and Apple up through to the present. To the present iPhone 6 Plus. And I have argued with... And so I say... Yeah, I said my grandmother was on the cutting edge of technology. I have her worn down hoe on her mantle to prove it. My grandfather was a test site for the York Engine Company on a pump, and River Brethren generally didn't, some groups of River Brethren didn't react to technology as long as it advanced the purposes of the kingdom. To say that this is amoral, and I've been on that philosophical debate for a long time. I think you have to, I say, have to start with what is the community of Jesus Christ? And excuse me if I'm offending anybody, but the Amish have a community that's geographically located. When you begin to do social media, I'm not in your face. And I have seen so many of my friends and relatives on Facebook whose total personality and community is unique, perhaps even to that posting. totally unlike they would behave at a family reunion or in my home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I asked the question, I think we have to ask the question, how does technology mm-hmm. alter God's ideal kingdom? As Anabaptists, we would say the body of Christ best displays the kingdom of Jesus. Come into our worship service and we'll show you how it happens. Can we have, we used to say you can't have church on television. Can you have church on Facebook? Can we do church? Could there be an Anabaptist community church just on Facebook? I mean, how about having our worship service?
I would say no. I have a little bit of experience with that. In fact, there with Menno Discuss, there were far-flung people, and there who didn't have an Anabaptist church, and it provided some valuable things. But we just found there is no replacement for a local body. You know, I mean, that was just reemphasized to us. There's something that doesn't happen over. And we were doing some discipleship via, you know, Skype video chat and that sort of thing, and it was good. It was really good, but it wasn't a replacement for local church.
How do you do family, and how do you do, when I was a kid, they had TV dinners, and my cousin asked at a breakfast table, they say, and this my uncle was a machine shop, and, he interacted with the world in the way that we didn't as farmers, and the daughter said, they say the TV dinners has a dramatic impact on family life. And my uncle was very even-keeled, but it was almost an explosion for him. He said, well, it affects more than that, more than just your family, the TV. And so when you have three family members texting while you're trying to have family at the supper table, and they're talking about the youth retreat, can we get the band to go there tomorrow? Those kind of things, they're important things, right? I mean, the youth retreat, it's important to get there.
Your question related to church, it might actually be bringing us to the next question on the list. And that is there any pressure to use social media to connect to younger people at church? It's very much related to doing church, so that might be a good question to take up right now. Do you have anything that you would want to say on that, Terry? The question of is there any social pressure to use social media to connect with younger people or interact with people at church? And should leaders use this method?
Well, we were youth leaders at our church the last 3 years. We got off of that position, we were replaced in that position at the end of our term, which was here at the end of the year. But I would say we didn't have any pressure to use social media to interact with them. We used texting, and that's not really social media, right? That's mass information. Meet at the McDonald's, well, not at McDonald's, at this parking lot to go to the youth retreat. And they would respond. We wanted them to respond. Is texting social media?
Maybe not technically. I kind of include it. So go ahead.
But Facebook, we weren't really using Facebook. Maybe I post a little bit on sometimes. Some other people did, and there was some that probably aren't allowed to use it, so we didn't go there. They do use Google+. Some. I know my son was just at Bible school, and I went on my. I don't use Google+ much, but I went in there to see what was going on, and I saw all these people missing each other. And it's like 3 days since the Bible school program, and they can't quit talking to each other. So I guess if the school, if the Bible school principal wanted to interact with them, maybe he could have jumped in there yet too and asked them why they were double bunking on the last night. But anyway, no, somebody else.
There's a number of our pastors that use social media. There seems to be a lot less filter in people's postings on social media versus how they interact with their pastors. I think it is a very valuable tool for pastors to figure out where their young people especially are at and respond to them. We've had a number of pastors even back in the Zanga days that were, would look at people's Zangas and Facebook and so forth. And those pastors are very much more in tune with what some of the issues are and are very much able to be more responsive to the struggles and the needs and where someone is at. Because what you love really comes out, mm-hmm. and what you love is the heart of being a person in a church. It's the heart of your Christian life, and it's what a pastor needs to speak to. And so I feel very positive about that as a tool to look in on the lives of people within the church.
I might just quick interject. I don't know if he's in the room, but one of the pastors from our fellowship that's on our technology committee is here today, and I know he's on Facebook. And I think the other pastor that's on our committee has indicated in our meetings that he's on Facebook too, but you never see him. He goes and checks out people's posts and stuff.
Yeah, as far as our congregation probably is, you know, I probably tend to be maybe as involved in technology as anyone at our congregation. And so I wouldn't say that we have a lot of pressure. There are those that are on. As an alternative to Hans, I don't spend time looking people up to try to check up on them on social media, although I do see it in the question. And sometimes in other congregations, people, you know, that I know from other congregations, and I ask myself the question, is this the real person or is the other person the real person? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of back to his question. There's kind of this divide. Who is the real person? Mm-hmm. And Hans is saying the Facebook person is probably, well...
I wouldn't go that far, but I think it gives valuable insight either way.
Yeah, yeah. So
maybe he's the person he wants to
be. Yeah. But we have to, we want to kind of, like, who are we dealing with here? But, yeah, do you want to say?
Well, one of the things that I was just looking at this article here again, one of the things I brought out back then was crowdsourcing. How many know what crowdsourcing is? Okay, so does that have anything to do with this? If people are joining a conversation and there's 50 other people saying that, I don't know, whatever, that the world is, well, suppose there's 2 million people saying the world is flat or round or up, you know. How does it affect us? And I guess that's one concern I have about social media is, are we strong enough when we go on it to believe what we believe and be careful not to just get swayed with the crowd? Crowdsourcing is beneficial today. There's actually some mapping software that works on crowdsourcing. What everybody thinks, they feed in information. I'm not sure if I can't find a good example. What's a good example of crowdsourcing?
Well, I love asking questions. If I mm-hmm. if I don't know something or need a suggestion or recommendation, I'll ask on Facebook. I mm-hmm. really like it. But crowdsourcing, like for instance, the Boston bombing, and this is a bad example because it failed abysmally, but it is an example. People went through security footage, like just tons of people on the internet mm-hmm. looking for the bombers,
right.
And so just. Like scaled up like you wouldn't believe, you know, all looking for, you know, who was the one that did this. That's an example of crowdsourcing. Another is mm-hmm. they like transcribing numbers. There's like programs out there take photos and you go through and you write. Anyway, I would say and this is kind of my alternative take on what you're saying, and I agree, you need to be strong to not be swayed. I mean, it's you are influenced by what you read, and mm-hmm. and there's some really erroneous, crazy stuff that people start believing and that goes around on social media that's just like, you know, oh my goodness, you know, why are people doing this? But I would say then that as ministries, we need to then mm-hmm. be, as churches, as ministries, we need to be there, and we need to be using that influence then to, in turn, speak truth. And try to bring...
It's like you said, the issue is amplified for mm-hmm. good or for bad. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a certain feed I get on End Time Headlines, and I'm dickering some days, should I just cut his feed off, because I get such wacko stuff from this fellow sometimes. You know, you get it too. It's like, okay, is this really relevant with Bible End Time Headlines? I don't know if it is, you know.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes left. And we have several questions left. Matt, is there one that you specifically want to address in the few minutes we have left?
Should we do the worst best? You have any thoughts? What you want to add that you'd like to hit yet? Okay. Maybe we could do the worst experience, best experience.
Okay. So what is the worst experience? What is the best experience that you have had with social media?
Sure.
I'm afraid I didn't prepare for that question. I'm sorry. I know I've had some really bad experiences, and I wish I would have prepared, because it would have probably made a good story, but I don't think I didn't. Maybe someone in the audience could give one of my worst social media. Matt?
Turned out for the best experience. We were in India in the hotel,
and then go to a different room.
Oh.
And you went on Twitter.
Oh, okay, and, yeah. There's a number of companies that are very responsive on Twitter. In fact, I love it. Back to this whole thing of interactivity versus versus just blasting stuff out. Many companies offer very good customer service on Twitter. You just tweet at them, and like just instant response. It's a great trick if you. It's one way to use it. And so that does segue to something we should be cautious about: is don't create a social media account for your ministry and abandon it. If people are tweeting at you or leaving comments on your page and you're not responding, there's no one at the wheel, it really is just harmful for you, because people come and find you and you see all these unanswered questions or inquiries or whatever. But I'm sorry, I sidetracked. No, does anyone have a best or worst?
A good experience, or something that you were glad you achieved, or something that it was a positive.
Well, keeping friends through social media has led us to, I'll just pick Costa Rica. We were in Guatemala, and by maintaining a friendship through Facebook, we got invited to a wedding in Costa Rica, and we've been back 3 times, and we really like it, but that's just kind of a personal thing. But yes, we did meet some of the people in the ministry down there and the print shop that does the Untorch and stuff. And so I like I said, I'm an extrovert, so I see that as valuable. But worst experience maybe is when we find out what some of the people really believe. Some stuff was exposed in their lives, and it was a real shocker, really sad. But I think Matt's preached at our church on that. It's like, when you're going on there, you know, be real, but and don't try to be something you're not, but I guess what's in the heart comes out, so.
Matt and I wouldn't know each other except for social media. Yeah. We met through social media.
Yeah. Maybe a good experience, so I use Twitter somewhat, and, you know, when you use it, if you're replying to people talking, they get to know who you are. So, as we were talking, they kind of get to know who you are. And I know it was at Microsoft conferences where I was walking down the hall, and someone tagged me and said, oh, you're the fellow that doesn't do so and so because you're a Christian, and he just out of the blue, and I don't even know who you are. So what? Let's talk. What do you think about this? And so you know it was a way to start talking. And I know, you know, in the same token, they said, you know, I can clearly you're a Christian, and they stop at your table at the conference, and they want to talk about, you know, being a Christian and how it is to be in an industry where a lot of people are just, you know, and IT industry, at least the conferences I go to, it's kind of a, you know, it's like a lot of professional industries. A lot of people aren't, so they you know, they stop in, they want to talk about church, they want to talk about being a Christian, and otherwise there would not be that connection. So I'd say that was a good one, a good connection.
Okay, just in the final minute or so, do you have a summary or closing comments that you'd like to make?
I would just say that social media is a super powerful tool, and we need to be very careful about how we do it, use it. We need to be intentional about how we use it. We need to think it through, and it has potential to do a lot of damage in our lives and in the lives of our ministries and congregations. It also has a lot of power for good, and I really think that we need to be intentional about social media, if it's going to be something that we allow in our churches and so forth. And many of our churches, it's kind of an inevitable thing. And so, yeah, my burden in my heart is that people are intentional about it and realize its power and harness it for the kingdom, for building the kingdom. And
the one comment I would like to make is let's not let it override our reading of real books. One thing I ran across in the past was back in the day, there was a guy by the name of Terrence Morgan that says that he was concerned about the absence of continuity and context, and he said bits of information that cannot be integrated into an intelligent and consistent whole. He was concerned about that. Well, what is Facebook? What is Twitter? It's bits of information that can't be integrated into. And so he's really concerned about that, and they've also done research on the mind, and they can physically see the difference of people that use. There's a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Mind. Really good book. There's another one called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Read that one if you get the chance. And back in 1978, Benjamin Franklin observed that Americans were so busy reading newspapers and pamphlets that they scarcely had time for books. He was concerned about that back in 1786. 1786, what would he say today? Anyway, so I'm challenging myself. Don't be on Facebook all the time reading emails. I just bought like 4 books when we were at the CAM packing the other night because I want to try and get more books to read.
So yeah, maybe one last thing I was going to say at the beginning and I didn't say it. One of the things I've thought, you know, I'm doing these videos on technical things, and I'm tweeting on technical things, and you're reaching thousands of people. And I knew it occurred to me, you know, is God's house in a tent while our business is in a palace? And, you know, how can we, you know, transition that over and use that? As Hans said, it's very powerful. It can reach a lot of people. And maybe I was redeemed by Bill Mullett's, you know, that business is God's work and somehow. But it seems to me, you know, maybe there's a message for the world that we could use social media, but there's a lot of complexities, as we said. So,
okay. I think that's all. Okay, thank you all very much.
I have a quick comment, if I may. I'm in real estate business. About 10 years ago, a guy said, we will eventually get full circle and we'll be back to face-to-face. That was before we even had a lot of this stuff. And I would just say social media should enhance our ministry, our business. It should never replace face-to-face. Don't use it as an excuse not to talk to people. I'm afraid our young people are getting close to that.
Hey, thank you very much.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.